Hello and welcome to Keyframe as part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, your source for all things anime, animation, cartoons, little doodles on the web, what have you. As always, we've got Rob.
Hello.
Tucky.
Hi.
And back with us again, we've got Lewis.
What's up, yo?
How's everyone doing?
I was going to say, that's very low energy, Tucky.
I'm
doing wick.
I'm being coy. I'm being very coy on a subtle level.
Sorry.
We're teasing.
It just sounded like I caught you off guard. You're like, oh, what's up, man?
Absolutely.
You've got to be wickety well and wickety awesome and, like, dab. Even though no one can see it, you got to dab and that energy just comes through. That's what the kids are like these days, isn't it?
The pills have kicked in! Welcome to Keyframe!
It's hard, man. It's like you want to be low energy, but you got to wait for the actual introduction to happen before you start interrupting, making a lot of noise.
Exactly.
Otherwise, no one's going to know what the hell is going on. Jake Paul doesn't get that.
It's all gone weird. Anyway, we've got some stuff to talk about today, but let's get some things out of the way before we talk about the meaty subject. First things first, Godzilla is finally getting a festival.
I mean, I've never seen a Godzilla movie, but still about time.
Yeah, the first Godzilla movie was in 1954. It's been 63 years, and there hasn't been a Godzilla festival?
He's the most iconic, like, monster of monsters.
Yes.
In, the amount of argument of, like, is he the most powerful of all monsters?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Game of Thrones has been out how long, and they have gotten how many conventions and festivals and memes?
Yeah.
Poor Godzilla. Stuck in the ocean.
Have they released Star Wars figurines yet? They should probably get on that.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the Shin Godzilla film was out in cinemas recently. That was pretty good. You got the sequel to Hollywood's new Godzilla film, which is, I'm talking about the one with Bryan Cranston, not the one from 98, which was actually pretty decent overall, had some great effects, but not enough of Godzilla, I'll be honest. But Godzilla, the sequel, is supposed to be King Kong versus Godzilla, as in Kong from Kong Skull Island. So basically giant gorilla versus Godzilla. And I'm curious to see how that's going to play out. But this festival is to tie in with the release of the animated trilogy of films called Godzilla, Planet of the Monsters.
I don't know. It's like, do they have to do a festival for a film? I mean, it basically means that the hype for the festival is going to be based on the hype of the movie. And
well, not necessarily.
When you got a big series like, yeah.
Not necessarily, because when you get right down to it, you have something like BlizzardCon. And BlizzardCon happens every single year. You don't get a new World of Warcraft update or a new Hearthstone update or anything like that. That ties in with the start of BlizzCon. But you still get loads of people going to BlizzCon because they love Blizzard games. And
yeah, basically what I was saying. Yeah. It's like, if you just do something, then you'll get people who like the thing. If you do something for a movie, well, some people might be like, the movie's going to suck, so I ain't going.
Well, I don't think
I don't know if the movies are going to be good or not, but
nah,
yeah.
I'll tell you something. This is a Japanese production, so I can guarantee you one thing. It's probably not going to suck, especially when it's Godzilla, because if you do a bad Godzilla movie in Japan, it can pretty much end your career, full stop. That's how
seppuku and all of that.
No, not seppuku, but in terms of
financial
your career,
seppuku.
Yeah, in terms of your career would pretty much be over if you were the director of a bad Godzilla movie, right? And I'm not saying that Godzilla movies have always been good, but there has been an enjoyment factor in a lot of the Godzilla movies that was missing from the Hollywood version in 98. But Godzilla is such an iconic Japanese property, and it is Japanese. Every time you think of Godzilla, you automatically think Godzilla stomping on Tokyo. You don't think Godzilla stomping on LA or Godzilla stomping on New York or Godzilla stomping on Quebec or London or something like that. You think Godzilla stomping on Tokyo. And that's the thing. The two are so intrinsically connected that Godzilla pretty much, I mean, all Godzilla needs to do to represent Japan properly is put on a t-shirt with a rising sun on. And that would be it. And then Godzilla would be like Japan's mascot forever.
It should be somewhere in the Tokyo Olympics. He's got to make an appearance at some point.
Yeah.
But just destroy it.
Well, let's put it this way. You know they've got the Gundam, the life-size Gundam, and they've got this new unicorn Gundam, right?
Yeah.
If they put a Godzilla next to that, a scale model.
Well, there was the Evangelion crossover with Eva 1 versus Godzilla.
Yeah.
I mean, Godzilla's been around. He's got a bigger winning streak than Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Yeah. I mean, Godzilla's beaten all the monsters. And
there we go. Conor McGregor can gun up against Godzilla.
He'd get flattened.
Big money spinner.
Oh, yeah, but
he couldn't beat Mayweather, so.
No. Because, you know, they had the giant robots in Pacific Rim. They should have just called Godzilla.
I'm just quite amazed that Godzilla has the word God in it and we don't have a festival for God. I mean, all the other gods have cool festivals.
It's the English translation. It's actually Gojira, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just Americans and Godzilla. And, you know, it's Godzilla sounds like a reptilian name, whereas Gojira doesn't.
I see.
What do the churches usually have? Summer fairs. Has Godzilla had a summer fair?
No.
Churches have those. I don't associate church with fun, so I wouldn't know.
Oh. A little big sale in a community centre where a giant kaiju.
The original Godzilla movie, right? When did the explosion happen that gave birth to Godzilla? Because we should call that Godzilla Christmas, celebrating the birth of Godzilla.
Don't we have Godzilla Day?
No, we have a Godzilla Day, but we don't have a Godzilla Festival.
Ah.
So I think that we should have, you know, as you said, Mark, since it's got the word God in, we should have a Godzilla Festival. We should have a Godzilla Christmas. And, you know, we know Godzilla has died and been resurrected, so we should have a Godzilla Easter as well.
Eat little chocolate Godzillas.
Godzilla Pancake Day.
I know November 3rd is Godzilla Day.
Yeah, Godzilla Pancake Day, Godzilla Lent, you know.
This would be perfect time for them to have started doing that before the festival thing.
I think that the festival is tying in with Godzilla Day.
Mm.
The films are going to open in Japan. The anime movies are going to open in Japan on November the 17th. And then they'll stream globally on Netflix later on in the year. And so I think the Godzilla festival that they're planning is for the 3rd of November, because it's only a fortnight before the actual films are out, or the first film in the trilogy is out. You know, with it being Godzilla Day, it's all perfectly timed.
Tell you what, looking at the marketing there for the Shin Godzilla movie, they opened a store called the Giant Unknown Creature Special Disaster Relief, Shinjuku Branch. Hit that red cross.
But this is the thing, Godzilla getting its own festival. I am more than happy about this. I think we should have one in the UK. I think there should be one in, like, Dubai and in, you know, in Cairo. All the capital cities of the world should have a Godzilla festival where you just have a bunch of idiot men who are drunk on whatever, wearing rubber suits and trying to punch each other.
Well, anything's better than a bunch of Naruto fans running around Monument doing the Naruto run.
In my defense, I'm putting that up. I'm going to it. I've promoted it. I'm going to that.
Going to what?
Don't know why, but I'm going to it.
Going to what?
Oh, well, there's this new meme where, because somebody did, everyone screamed like Goku in the park, dear. And people were like, oh, it's just one of them Facebook groups that people pass off. And then somebody filmed it, and actually people did turn up and scream like Goku in the park. Then they did a Let's Run Like Naruto, and everybody turned up to the Naruto thing. Now there's like a localized branching of the meme, where, in our case, in Newcastle, around Monument, people are going to run like Naruto on the 20th of September. And I put up, if you want to lose all self-respect and weed out the locals, join it. So,
can I just point something out?
The locals need some drama in their life, man. Yeah. Everyone needs someone to point at and be like, yo, man, they ain't me.
Can I just point something out? And it has to do with the physics of running. I've seen the way that the ninjas allegedly run, and this is allegedly because ninjas didn't actually run like that. And the reason why they didn't run like that is because running like that is unbalanced, and the job of ninjas originally was espionage, information gathering, that sort of thing, maybe the odd assassination, and so they were carrying weapons. So they basically had to make sure their weapons didn't make noise, so they developed a way of running that basically could compensate for weapons rattling, metal making noise, that sort of thing. They didn't run leaning forward with their hands back like some kind of, I don't know, 1930s showgirl, because that's what
Excuse
it looks like.
You, it's so they can run through the trees without, you know, bumping into them.
They
you
will
need to
bump
learn your Konoha technique.
No, they will bump into the trees. It's pretty much guaranteed that they'll bump into the trees because of the way they're running.
You get a little bit of airflow going on, so the ninjas that are running behind get a bit of a slipstream going on. Faster exactly. travel.
That way, like, a branch just slides across you, doesn't get all tangled up in your arms, man.
No, the Naruto writers know what they're doing, but it's the people who are trying to run like Naruto who don't know what they're doing. And I foresee, and I think in this case, I'm going to be pretty good at predicting the future. I foresee a bunch of people going ass over tit, face planting ridiculously because they tried to run like Naruto.
It doesn't scratch the surface. There's a group in Florida that are going to try Naruto run in Hurricane Irma.
Oh my God.
Category 5 winds. Winds strong enough to measure as an earthquake. They're going to try Naruto run in it, apparently.
I doubt that's going to happen.
Well, they'll finally get their wish. They'll be flying through the sky like a ninja.
And nothing of value was lost on that day.
No. Anyway, moving on to Nick Park and Aardman. And they have been working steadily on their new film called Early Man. And the first trailer, the first full trailer, actually came out. So what do you guys think?
It was pretty funny.
The scene.
I feel it kind of harks back more to the Pirates film rather than maybe Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah, I always thought Pirates and an Adventure with Scientists was one of the best films from Aardman. I know that everyone seems to clamour on about the Wallace and Gromit movies, but Chicken Run is a very good movie. And Curse of the Were-Rabbit is a very good movie as well. But Pirates in an Adventure with Scientists is just, it's a gem. It's a comedy
that one
gem.
I haven't seen.
Why is it called Blood Island? Because it's in the shape of some blood.
The humour in it was just top notch.
And what was the female one called?
Oh, the Strangely Curvaceous Pirate.
I love that.
Who's obviously female and wearing a fake beard, but.
Pirate with gout.
Yes. So, I love Pirates in an Adventure with Scientists. It has everything to make you smile.
Yeah, it's one of those films you can just pop on, even if you're not even watching it properly, you can just half watch it and you'll always find some new joke out of it.
Yeah.
It'll be on at Christmas again.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was only on the other day. I think it was on ITV or BBC. It was on, and, I just channel hopped, found it, and just sat down and watched it and enjoyed myself immensely.
It'll be on Netflix or Amazon Prime. You can just watch it whenever you want. All Pirates, all day.
I've got it on disc, so I can watch it whenever I want anyway. Early Man, I think this is one of those trailers where they've pretty much given away the story. You know what the story is going to be. I'm actually hoping that they haven't done the typical Hollywood thing and given away all of the good jokes, because some of the lines in the trailer were you know, little gems. I wouldn't say they were amazingly humorous. They didn't make me fall over laughing. The humour wasn't, like, laugh-out-loud funny. It's not something that's going to make you fall off your chair, but and the joke about the underwear was, you know, that one stood out for me.
That was really funny.
Have you all changed your underwear? Yeah, I changed mine with him, and everyone just freezes. Like, did I just hear that right?
I was, like, watching it. Obviously, we were watching it just before we came on here, and I was, like, watching it. I was trying not to laugh because, obviously, you were in a conversation about Godzilla, and I was just like, I was trying not to laugh. I was just like, "Oh, that was really funny." I'm gonna watch it again once I finish with this, because it was really good.
Yeah.
The only concern I've got,
yeah,
that I kind of felt a lot like that film that Jack Black was in.
Oh yeah,
yeah, but, yeah, one or something.
Yeah, one. Yeah. But the thing is, I have more faith in Nick Park and Aardman to do comedy than I do with Jack Black. If it's anything that isn't music-related, then I seriously doubt his comedy ability. When it's music-related, then he's on much firmer ground, which is why School of Rock worked.
Yeah.
But any other film where there is no music involved and you see the flaws, I mean, look at Gulliver's Travels.
Look at Goosebumps.
I mean, for me, I feel like I didn't get to appreciate the trailer properly, I guess, because... You know, there was a bit of a conversation. I don't think I really caught it properly. But, you know, the animation and the style is good enough. But, yeah, it's an animated movie. It's just kind of what I got from it. Like, in a sort of comedy base, and you got a bad guy, and he's, like, more powerful because he's got, like, the power of iron rather than
bronze,
you know, stone and all that. Sorry, bronze, that's it.
Yeah, the age of bronze has come, and now the Stone Age men, the cavemen, as they're called. And I love the fact that the cavemen, that the Bronze Age characters, all of them look a lot more kind of refined in their facial features than the actual Stone Age men. The Stone Age men look, you know, they've got the jutting brows and the upturned noses that make them look like pigs, and you know, they're all wearing furs with the unkempt hair and everything. Whereas the Bronze Age characters, they've all got clothes and they've all got, you know, shapely noses and stuff like that. That I found quite funny.
I've got one question that kind of bothered us, not really with the film itself, but something like I've kind of noticed.
Okay.
Does anybody else wonder if Nick Park has a fetish for rabbits? Because this trailer had a rabbit in, and nearly all of his previous films have rabbits in.
I know one film that doesn't.
Pirates.
No.
Flushed Away.
That that makes three films that don't. The Wrong Trousers. It has a penguin.
Yeah, I was just thinking kind of Wallace and Gromit on a whole, and just kind of had the whole were-rabbit one. I'm sure they had rabbits in at some point as well.
I don't know.
I was just like, wow, he really likes his rabbits.
I don't know. I think it's just one of those animals that can be made to look funny. I mean, I remember Nick Park's early stuff, you know, with Creature Comforts, where they went around and just asked random questions to people on the street, and then they basically took the audio and then animated different animals in a zoo to the audio, so you'd have like this real idiosyncrasy between what you're seeing and what you're hearing. If you get a chance, look for Creature Comforts. It's got some glorious moments in there. It's not all, you know, gold, but it does have some glorious moments in there, and it does hint at the, you know, at the career that Nick Park is, or the niche that Nick Park is going to carve out for himself.
I think I remember seeing some of those back in the day.
They used to show it all over. So anyway, leaving that to one side, and moving on to the meat of the story, which is Netflix's Neo Yorkio, which I'm guessing is supposed to be a cross between New York and Tokyo, with the word Neo thrown in instead of new, because they're basically mean the same thing. And this one has an all-star cast. Let me rephrase. This one has an all-star cast of Susan Sarandon, Jude Law, Tavi Gevinson, Jason Schwartzman, Desison Mero, Richard Ayoade, Ike Barinholtz, Steve Buscemi, Alexa Chung, Stephen Fry, Katie Mixon, Annette Mahendru, Kiernan Shipka, Willow Smith, and Amanda Stenberg, and it also features Jaden Smith.
Get brutalized.
See, he gets top billing, but Jaden, I have seen After Earth, and I still hate you for it.
His acting seemed absolutely wondrous from what I could tell from the trailer.
No, he can't act. He can't.
You just don't understand. Like, it's that deadpan delivery. It just adds so much to a character, you know?
No. How is it possible to be able to not act when you're just giving the voice to something?
It really felt like they knew that he couldn't act, so they thought they'd put him as a voice actor, and it turns out he can't voice act either.
Well, just give me one second, because there was a comment that I found that I wanted to mention. Now, there have been comments on this. I find it hilarious that this video has 5,000 likes and 4,000 dislikes.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And whoa, there are people saying, this genuinely looks terrible and it made me sad. Jude Law, you don't need this.
What are you doing, Jude? You've got enough money. You didn't need to be doing this crap.
No. American anime is awful. This is the world I live in, where Steve Buscemi, Jaden Smith, and Netflix make an anime.
Hey, Steve Buscemi might be amazing.
I just feel like...
can't see his face, so he might be better.
Is it a mecha anime? Is it, like, an anime about superpowers? Like, a Boondocks version 3? Like, just your general animation with, like, all these famous people in it? It's like, well, what is it? What's it meant to be, huh?
Basically, the story is this. Neo Yorkio is the greatest city in the world. It's the most populous urban agglomeration in North America, but its prestige does not merely stem from its size. Neo Yorkio is a diverse labyrinth of cultural and architectural innovation at the forefront of global fashion and finance. All of this is cold comfort to the lovesick Kaz Khan, who's played by Jaden Smith, the youngest member of a family of magistocrats, pink-haired demon slayers who once liberated the city. Today, his demon slaying is barely more than a side hustle coordinated by his Aunt Agatha, Susan Sarandon. Kaz himself would rather be concerned with shopping, field hockey, and of course, mending his broken heart. Always, hang on, always by Kaz's side are his faithful mecha butler, Charles, played by Jude Law, his inseparable friends Lexi and Gottlieb, the kid Mero and Dis is Nice, as he navigates the complexities of life in Neo-Yokio and tries to stay one step ahead of his arch-rival, Neo-Yokio's number one most eligible bachelor, Arcangelo Corelli, played by Jason Schwartzman. Things take a mysterious turn when Kaz is drawn into the turbulent world of ex-fashion blogger Helena Santessaro, played by Tavi Gevinson, setting in motion a sequence of events that force him to question everything he knows about Neo-Yokio.
Like, look, I got a question.
I have
where
more
does
than
Thugnificent
one...
fit into this?
Where does what?
Thugnificent fit into this?
No, it fits in nowhere. I have more than one question for this.
I saw his black self in the trailer, yo.
I have more than one question about this. My first question is, Netflix, what the fuck?
We'll let you off with the live-action Death Note thing. However, what are you playing at?
I can't find this comment, but somebody basically left a comment, which I totally agree with, on this video, which said Netflix have basically gone through the how to make a hit anime checklist and ticks all of the boxes, and then stolen a bunch of ideas from other anime and thrown them in there, and then they went on to talk about how if you polish a turd, it's still a turd, by the same token, you know, throwing all of these stars at this isn't going to make it any good.
It's got the element of Big Hero 6 there, because they did San Francisco and Tokyo mixed. I mean, why mix cities up? You know, why hybrid cities?
Thing is, Big Hero 6...
sounds stylish, man.
The thing is, Big Hero 6 worked because even though they mixed the cities together, so you had San Fran Tokyo, right? The main character in Big Hero 6 was still vaguely Japanese. Yeah?
Yeah.
And they didn't mash words together like magistocrats. What the hell is a magistocrat?
Magical aristocrat?
Pretty much, but like, what's the point? What does that add to anything? It's as you said, they just found anime things, they just kind of threw them in there and then tried to westernize it, and the result is just unpalatable from what I can tell from the trailer, at least.
It's the thing that bugs me is the fact that there's an automatic assumption that if you do this, if you tick these boxes, you're going to have a hit. It's basically the lowest common denominator of the animation art form, because animation is an art form. You know, it's the lowest common denominator. It's the crass commercialization of it. And it's done by a Western company, and they're doing what all Western companies that seem to try and get into anime do. And it's like they've not actually learned any lessons over the last 30 years whatsoever.
Is this the future of anime?
I'm wondering if, like, in some way it's going to end up appealing to, like, people who don't watch anime. Well, no, it's not going to. It's still a cartoon.
Yeah, it's not going to appeal to anybody. It's not going to appeal to fans of Western animation. It's not going to appeal to fans of anime. Look at Ruby, right? Ruby is kind of a prime example of what the Western animation should be doing in order to make, you know, something that's akin to anime but very much their own product. Same with Avatar, The Legend of Aang and The Legend of Korra.
I'm wondering where Boondocks fits into it, because it was at least initially successful.
No, Boondocks, I absolutely adore Boondocks, right? The first couple of seasons are what have...
I mean, I don't know if it's... it's still anime, I guess. No, and you know, it did its own thing.
It's animation. I'd say Boondocks is more Western animation than anime. Although there are some elements of anime in there. It's very much its own thing. It's kind of like Avatar, The Legend of Aang, and The Legend of Korra. They take the influence of anime, but make their own product, which is very much its own thing. You know, it's
right.
Not anime. You know, you wouldn't say that, you know, Korra was anime, and you wouldn't say that Aang was anime. But they have enough in common with anime for you to appreciate that they've basically taken a bunch of ideas from anime and a bunch of techniques from anime and applied them to make their own thing. You know, and that's what should be done. Not this. This is not how you want to progress.
It's a shame, because obviously we looked at that Castlevania that Netflix put out not long ago, and that was really good. And now they're putting this out, which is not looking quite good.
I think it's because with all of the properties that you have in Japan, I think that they're basically forecasting a demand for homegrown products, not stuff that's imported from another country. And that's laudable. I think it's a great idea to start making your own animation that's developed in-house. Maybe use another studio. I think Production IG was involved in this one, weren't they?
Yeah, but I'm sure that it's them that's doing it.
I'm very disappointed, Production IG. Very.
Do you know what I think's happened is that I think, like, I don't know how much... I know Netflix has some anime on it, so I don't know, like, how informed the people who make these decisions are about anime in general.
Very.
But
they
I feel
are
like with a lot
informed.
Of people who...
They are very...
Then I don't really understand this, because, like, I feel like with people who don't watch anime, they seem to have this set idea of what anime is, rather than looking at it as you say, an art form or a medium. They automatically associate anime with certain things, and this kind of feels like it's been made by someone who's maybe seen a few anime but isn't really into it and goes, oh, this is what anime is. If we make this, put a Western spin on it and get this all-star cast, it will attract everyone.
Yeah.
When the reality is people like certain anime for certain reasons.
Yeah.
And generally people who like anime tend towards it because it's animation that, you know, that can have very different ideas depending on what you're looking for. And I think they've kind of missed that.
Well, this is the point exactly, Lewis. You've pretty much hit the nail on the head. Anime, by its nature, has such diversity within the medium that there are so many different stories, and you can explore anime for the next year or so and still come up with something new to watch. Western animation doesn't have that kind of depth to it, and trying to artificially create something that is based on your checklists and stuff like that isn't going to cut the mustard. It's not going to work. What you need is to take a more intuitive approach. So you need to do stuff like Ruby. You need to do stuff like Avatar, not the James Cameron movie, or the crappy film by M. Night Shyamalan.
Shawaddy-waddy.
No, we don't say Shawaddy-waddy. Not anymore. We say Shaboody-boody.
Well, you know what? They could have made something like, in terms of just concept, as Western as anything, and just made it an anime style and made it decent, and it would have been fine.
Teen Titans. Again, another prime example. The original Teen Titans, not Teen Titans Go. But this is the thing. Castlevania, as Mark mentioned, is a great 4 episodes, you know, really well done. And Netflix have a lot of experience dealing with anime. I mean, what was that sci-fi one that they did? The Tsutomu Nihei story? I've forgotten the name of it.
I can't remember what else they did. They did Blame. They did a Rare. They did the
Blame movie.
Knights of Sidonia.
Knights of Sidonia, that's it. They were involved in the in Knights of Sidonia. They were involved in Blame. They've had anime on Netflix several times. And again, now there's anime on Netflix again. And this is the thing. They've got a lot of experience at the executive level. They have people who know about anime, who understand the medium, who should be involved in the decision-making process for things like this. And if they were involved, then shame on you. I want to find you and punch you in the balls, even if you're a woman.
Maybe for all we know, we just saw all of these disconnected concepts, and there's so many of them, they just couldn't properly explain it in one trailer, and it looks a mess. Maybe. And then we watch the show, and it's like, oh, everything makes sense now. This is actually decent.
I want to ask you guys a question. Have you seen anything, except for that very first film, where Will Smith was trying to find a job, right? Except for that film? Have you seen any film since then that has Jaden Smith in that was any good?
I don't think I've seen a Jaden Smith film, but I don't know. He doesn't... maybe I'm a terrible person for saying this, but just something about, like, if you do a Google image search, like, of Jaden Smith, just something about it just says, like, nothing actually good is going to come out of that guy. Like, I'm sorry. He just has that face, and he just has that sense to him. Like, I'm sorry, you might be a very nice guy, Jaden. You know, you might be trying your hardest. You know, maybe you know people, but, like, when I look at you, I don't see anything good.
Was he the one who was in the Karate Kid film?
Yeah, that wasn't actually Karate. It was Kung Fu. So it should have been called the Kung Fu Kid, not the Karate Kid.
Well, it's good to see that his acting has come leaps and bounds since then. Like, his delivery has evolved greatly.
I don't think Will's taught him anything growing up. I think he's just been left at Jazzy Jeff's house to be raised by him.
To be thrown out the door.
It's like Will was busy partying in Miami and whatnot, and they've just left the kid with Jazzy Jeff for a laugh.
For the summertime. Oh, all the Will Smith tracks are coming out. All I know is that I remember, he was on Graham Norton, right?
Yeah.
And
About Will Smith here.
We're talking about Will Smith with his son, Jaden. It was kind of his debut into society.
Oh, this was the drinking story. Where it's like, he was in England and he's like, oh, he orders alcohol and he didn't realize the drinking age was 18.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, the time when Will brought Jazzy Jeff and, what's his face? Carlton,
yeah. Aye.
And they all did that routine at the end. But before then, there was a little bit of a rap and Will Smith is fine. He's basically rapping because that's what he did for like half his life. But then the then the microphone goes to Jaden, and you can tell he's as wooden as anything.
Yeah, that describes like all the what little acting I've seen, basically based off of that trailer and Karate Kid. Low energy, Jaden.
You make him sound like the opposite of Gatorade or Lucasade. Low energy, Jaden, for the times when you just don't give a fuck. Oh, anyway, on that note, well, let's take a break.
Hey, so, films. Those are certainly things, right? And if you want to listen to much better film analysis than that, listen to Cinema Eclectica, also on the Geek Show Podcast Network.
Hello, ladies, gentlemen, and other denominations. Welcome back to Keyframe, and we're going straight into reviews. Mark, over to you.
I witnessed Belladonna of Sadness.
I love your phrasing. You witnessed.
How do I explain this?
You make it sound like a drive-by shooting.
Oh, dear God. This is not a bad film by any extent. However, I am still receiving therapy for it to this day.
Oh, it's not that bad.
It kind of is, really.
Okay, let's put it this way. It's from 1973, the film, Belladonna of Sadness. The original title was, it's also known as La Sorcière and Tragedy of Belladonna.
Yeah, it's one of Tezuka's adult films that he did, which started with, I think it was 1001 Arabian Nights.
Yep.
And then continued with Cleopatra.
Yeah. See, you mentioned Tezuka. The weird thing is, this is the third and final film in the Animerama trilogy, right? And it wasn't directed by Tezuka.
No, he kind of just... It was like his animation company, I believe it was.
Yeah. The thing is, he'd left the actual production company during the early stages to focus on manga. This was actually directed by Eiichi Yamamoto.
That's right, yeah. I think 1001 Arabian Nights is the first, or what is considered one of the first adult-only animations.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, 1001 Nights, and then after that was Cleopatra, and then Belladonna of Sadness. The thing is, Belladonna of Sadness has nothing to do with the actual 1001 Arabian Nights, as in the series of stories that Scheherazade told the Emperor in order to not be beheaded. It's got nothing to do with those. But it has a lot to do with Satanism and witchcraft.
Yeah. It's also very adult. Like we're saying, we should have probably put a rating on a kind of adult warning thing on Asian.
Warning, this film may contain adult content. Warning.
It may have boobs.
Yeah. Warning, this review may have boobs. Although you won't see them because it's audio only.
Unless you use Google or your imagination. Use your imagination. You may regret it. So yeah, Belladonna of Sadness, we're gonna get to it. This is basically the story of two young peasants, Jean and Jean.
Yeah.
Or is it Jean and Jean?
I believe you pronounce them both as Jean because they're both French. It's just one is Jean as in the female form of Jean, and the other one is Jean as in the male form of Jean. So one spelled G-E-A-N-N-E. The other one's spelt G-E-A-N.
Mm-hmm. So it's the male and female version of Jean. And basically, their wedding plans are mucked up when Jean, the female one, just to make sure, is violated by the local feudal lord.
Yeah, the local baron.
Yeah.
This is set during medieval times, and there was a thing, and if you've watched Braveheart, the Mel Gibson movie, then you'll know what I'm talking about. It was called Prima Nocte, and it was First Night. And basically, the whole idea was the ruling lord had the rights to any newlywed wife on their first night of the wedding.
Yeah. So, after that, she's basically rejected as unclean by her future husband, and just kind of seduced, I wouldn't say, kind of tricked by the devil.
Yep.
Who has his form as a giant penis. And the rest of the story is kind of her getting her revenge on kind of everybody, really, isn't it? Her passions are awakened is the tagline that the film uses. And she kind of just takes a revenge on everybody. I don't think she takes a revenge on her husband. I can't really remember. He kind of just has a small part of play for a little bit longer, then kills himself, I believe.
Yeah, he just kind of fades out of the story, and then a lot of this is basically... See, the thing that got me about Belladonna of Sadness, it's one of those stories where they basically take the idea of hell hath no fury than a woman scorned.
Yeah. Mm.
And they use that in quite a literal sense.
Berseria reminds me a bit of that in that regard. I know it's completely different, but bad things happen and then you just take revenge on the world.
Well, not quite. Tales of Berseria wasn't bad things happen, you take revenge on the world. Take revenge on one person was more Tales of Berseria.
It kind of got twisted into that because everyone else is just obstacles if they're in the way. But yeah.
Well, no, because if that was the case, then she wouldn't have ended up with a team of her own to fight. She would have been just a single person going out for revenge against everybody. That would be the literal sense of that playing out in Tales of Berseria. But whereas Belladonna of Sadness, she is basically by herself.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't have allies. She doesn't have anyone to help her.
She kind of becomes like she's kind of known as a witch. And she starts curing some of the other townsfolk of, I think it's the plague they've got at that point.
Yeah.
And she starts being known as like a witch, and then all kinds of weird sex things happen.
Because obviously, witchcraft and sex go hand in hand. Everybody knows that during medieval times, because witches get jiggy with the devil. That's how they get their powers. Didn't you know that? Didn't you know that, Mark?
Harry Potter lied to me.
Oh, God, Hermione Granger.
No. Oh, too young. Right. We'll move swiftly on from that.
Yes.
So what we have in this film is a lot of powerful and sometimes genuinely confusing sex scenes.
Yeah.
It's very trippy, as to be expected from the 1970s.
It is very, very trippy. There's a lot of flowing animation, and by flowing I mean the actual lines are like water.
Yeah, it really, I don't know how they actually did it, but it looks like they kind of did it on like a giant tapestry, and like a lot of the camera angles is like moving across this tapestry, and that's showing everything that's going on.
Yeah.
It's really one of those films that is... See, this is a Japanese anime, but it's not anime. It's definitely more animation. And that's what is so... I wouldn't say memorable, but that is one of the definite like great points about this film, is that if you've got interest in animation as an art form, there's not a lot of other series or films that kind of do this.
Yeah.
It's definitely trippy. It's definitely one of those films where you're kind of watching it and you're expecting the Beatles to rock up in the Yellow Submarine at some point.
Yeah, this does fit right in with that kind of era of animation. And I mean, there were a few other things. There was Fritz the Cat being done over in America, I think around the same time as this. And there were a few things being done on the continent around the same time as well. And so you had this kind of experimental era of animation, which effectively it didn't so much lead the way, but it did act as kind of a guide, you know, a pointer in the right direction for the Japanese industry.
Yeah, it's just amazing seeing how they've actually put it all together. I mean, it's so trippy, it's so weird, but it was such a good watch because of that. The subject matter is taken seriously through the entire film. I mean, yeah, you are going to be sitting there laughing, just trying to figure out why, like, an egg has just give birth to a giant penis. You are going to be laughing at stuff like that, but...
Wait, it's, like, really weird metaphor, but serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically. Okay. See, this is the thing. You've watched Belladonna of Sadness now, right?
Mm-hmm.
My next challenge for you, Mark, is watch Angel's Egg.
I've heard a lot of things about that one. But this is one of those films that, despite the subject matter, because I know a lot of people, I mean, when I've explained this film to other, like, to my friends and all that, they've kind of, like, snickered and stuff like that. It's like, oh, well, it's like, oh, it's probably something like Prison School, or it's like Monster Museum or something like that. And I was like, no, this is...
to stop projecting.
This is far more creepy than that. And they're sitting there going, oh, look at this stuff in Berserk, what's happening in Berserk? I was like, I've seen Belladonna of Sadness. It's so much worse. Yeah.
I have to agree with you on this, Mark. I think Belladonna of Sadness is something that you experience more than you watch. Weirdly enough, it's one of those rare anime that I've kind of put in the same category as Barefoot Gen, where Barefoot Gen is, you can watch Grave of the Fireflies, right? Mm-hmm. And you can cry at Grave of the Fireflies, and you can tear up at Grave of the Fireflies, and you can enjoy Grave of the Fireflies. But Barefoot Gen is a movie that you sit there and you experience. You don't watch it with just your eyes. You watch it with your soul, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Belladonna of Sadness is one of those anime. You watch it with more than just your eyes and your brain. It's one of those anime that kind of shows just what animation could actually be if you really experiment, if you really push the boundaries of animation. And it shows animation as an art form in the truest sense, I reckon.
I mean, I know this film has been shown in some film festivals. I know when it was in like stuff like Scotland Loves Animation. I think it was in one or two of the London ones as well.
Yeah. I know it's been at the London Film Festival, and it's been at the Paris Film Festival as well.
Yeah, and it's definitely one of those ones where if you think animation is an art form, I think it's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah.
I just want to point out one more thing, because this comes out with a nice little booklet as well, which explains some of the other stuff that happened.
Yeah.
And apparently one of the first times it was shown was in Berlin in 1974, I believe.
Yeah.
And 1973. And the people who went didn't know what they were expecting, and they were that used to seeing Disney, they took their kids.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Apparently there were stampedes to the to get out of the building once they realised what they were actually watching.
It was all about Satanism, witchcraft and sex. It's Eyes Wide Shut all over again.
Slightly different to Peter Pan, but only slightly.
Yeah. Anyway, that's Belladonna of Sadness. I think you'll agree with me on this, Mark. If you're into animation, as in if you're studying it, if you want to know more about animation as an art form, then this is one you definitely should watch.
Yeah, I think even if you want to say that you're a serious anime fan, I think it's worth watching. Well, I recommend anybody watch it as long as they're old enough.
I think if you want to say you're a serious anime fan and you haven't watched Akira or Ghost in the Shell, the original movie, or Neon Genesis Evangelion, or Cowboy Bebop, or a Gundam, or a Macross, either one is fine. Then you can't really call yourself a serious anime fan.
Well, better kill myself then.
At least,
seen any of those. No,
at least you should have watched one of those. You know.
I don't think I have.
Then you can't call yourself a serious anime fan, Lewis.
I don't know. I don't identify as things. I'm me.
I identify as an anime fan.
So what did you think of Akira? Oh, what's Akira?
Well, people know what Akira is. Not anime fans know what Akira is.
No, they don't.
There's people that aren't super into it anyway.
No, I've met some people who are heavily into anime, and you go, so did you enjoy Akira then? What's Akira? They just look at you with their bright eyes and their bushy tails, because you know, some of them are furries, and they just, you know, awfully just say to you in all innocence, you know, complete innocence, what's Akira? And you go, I don't know how to answer that.
Just scream Tetsuo at them.
Anyway, moving on to Kinero Mosaic Season 1.
Kinero! Kinmoza!
Yes, Kinmoza! Which, I'll be honest, it does sound like something, like some kind of greeting you'd hear in one of the African countries.
Maybe.
It does though, doesn't it? You know, just walking into someone's house and they go, Kinmoza!
I don't know, I'm not getting it. If anything, it sounds more Italian to me, but...
Hey, it could be Italian, Kinmoza. I don't know. It could be, you know, Italian grandma going, Kinmoza, and then kissing you on both cheeks. It could be Jewish, for all I know. We don't know.
I'm going to go through every ethnic pronunciation of this title.
Yes, I'll have the Kinmoza with the side of pesto sauce, please.
Actually, yeah, mozzarella. Good one, Lewis. Good one.
Could be Geordie, could be Kinmoza League.
Kinmoza!
Sounds like a curry.
With the Geordie one, when you said Kinmoza, you make it sound like it's really delicious or really good. So yeah, Kinero Mosaic, the story of a girl who went to England and then got followed back to Japan by a small blonde girl.
England is my city.
That's literally what it's about, isn't it?
It is. And not only that, she brings another one over from England as well. So basically, the premise of this is cute girls doing cute things
in a cute way.
Yeah, and it's the first thing to start with this, we've got to discuss the English voice acting in the original Japanese version.
Okay.
I haven't seen the English dub. I've just seen the subbed version.
And
they're speaking English, and they've got the Japanese subtitles, and then the English subtitles, even though you don't need English subtitles.
Yes. See,
just like, oh my god, is my reaction.
Yeah. Kinero Mosaic is just, the thing is, at least they tried. And I know it's English, and it's horrible, horrible English. And I know it's just kind of, yeah, but at least they tried. You know,
that's what like half the memes are about, though. So they kind of got something out of it in the end.
Yeah, when you get right down to it, there wasn't much they could do with this because this is one of those anime that's taken from a 4-panel manga. The original manga was by Yuihara, and when you take something that's effectively just in the format of a gag manga and you try and put it to anime, you have to kind of develop more of a story for it. You have to fill in the blanks that are there. And if you look at Aho Girl, which is on right now. I've read the manga, I've watched a couple of episodes of the anime, and I've got to say, they've had to make a couple of tweaks to the anime that help the story flow better.
Yeah, I've been reading, watching that as well, and I completely agree with you with that.
You know, because it is difficult when something is just a 4-panel manga, especially when it's a gag manga. This one was more kind of slice of life, lighthearted comedy. The story of Shinobu Omiya, who is a Japanese high school girl, although she doesn't look like it in the anime. She is apparently a Japanese high school girl, and 5 years previous, she had a homestay in England with a family called the Cartlett family, and a young girl was living there who was the daughter of the Cartlett parents, called Alice. And Shinobu receives a letter from Alice 5 years later, saying that Alice is coming to Japan to live with her.
Yeah, that's basically it. That's not just a setup. That's basically the whole 12 episodes. It's like blonde girl comes over from England, brings her mate.
Yeah,
they do stuff.
She doesn't bring her mate. Her mate turns up later on because her mate is going, why is she going to Japan? I'm so lonely over in England now. I'm going to Japan as well. Why did she have to go all the way to Japan?
Her friend was half, wasn't she?
Yeah, kind of, because the dad's like, oh, Japan's me home. I'll fly her out there. Let's go live over in Japan on the whim of me daughter.
Yeah. Because,
you know, if he's that rich.
That's Karen. She gets what she wants, yo.
If he's that rich, he's got to have a business. If he's got a business, he's got to be busy working in England if he's living there. He can't just drop his whole life and move over to Japan just because his daughter's missing the friend and whatnot.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
I don't know. Maybe he's just that rich that he doesn't have to do anything anymore. Just all his decisions via Skype.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not expecting a sense of realism in an anime, but how are it's like when she turns up at the school, they didn't really specify how long it was between the homestay and her moving to Japan. But it's like, yeah, I've been studying Japanese really hard. And from the looks of her house, she lives in some kind of distant village. Where's a Japanese tutor there? There's barely one house there.
Thing is, if you remember the series at the beginning, Alice's house in England, I thought, hang on, nobody lives in a house like that in England unless they're living out in the most English village or hamlet in all of England.
Those places exist though.
Yeah, well, you know where she lives. They're going to have a bell ringer who shouts nonsense. It's very countrysidey.
It was very countrysidey, but they made the cottage, and it literally was a cottage. It was the quaint country cottage, the true English quaint country cottage. That's what Alice lived in.
I know. Did you see the bed sheets as well? That had the regal arms.
Yes.
I'm just saying, no one is that British that you're going to have a bedspread with the whole Queen's arms and the royal insignia on. We get it. They're in Britain.
Yep,
I'm from England.
It's like I met Karen when she's got this British kind of Union, the Union flag blazer.
Yep,
and it's like we get it. She's from Britain.
It does shove it in your face a bit.
I know the selling point of it's like, oh look, it's foreigners in Japan and they're English, quaint. Why not have St. George's Cross?
Given that though, I feel like it would have been nice if they'd done a bit more of it. I'm not even saying it had to be super serious or anything, but that gives arguably quite a few set up for jokes that I feel like at the time they missed.
They missed a lot, in my opinion. I mean, I know this is highly rated. I don't know how. I'm still trying to get my head around how it's highly rated.
Well, I mean, I feel like for cute girls doing cute things, it does the job pretty well.
I think the main reason it gets highly rated is because it is very much a slice of life. And it's one of those ones where it's got some charm to it, right? If you ignore the English and stuff like that, it's got that.
Oh, I think the English makes it. But
yeah, the English. The English obviously makes it. But if you take out the English, then what's left is something that is, although it's fairly generic, it's got some charm to it. It's something that you could easily just put on an episode and just have it going on in the background. And it would be inane, non-offensive humor. It would be something that is just in the background, just to take the edge off the quiet,
Yeah, some people go for that, but you need anime. It's an art form. It's something that's supposed to inspire you, supposed to bring feelings, not just something you put in the background or whatever you're doing.
I don't know. There's different things for different people. Not everything has to be deep and artful, and Kinemon Mosaic is obviously very far from that, but I think as a cute girl's doing cute things without too much else to it apart from, silly jokes, I thought it was enjoyable enough in that regard.
The thing is,
it's just not breaking any molds.
Yeah. The thing is, around the time that it came out, this was out originally in 2013, wasn't it?
Yep.
It was a little while ago.
Yeah, it was 2013, and then there was the second season a couple of years later. And around that time, there was a lot of stuff being, I think it was from 2011 to 2013. There was various things being done, various titles being released about Japanese people going overseas or overseas people coming to Japan kind of thing, or having halves in Japan, that sort of thing. One of the ones that I remember from that time was one called Kwase in a Foreign Labyrinth, or Ikokumero no Kwase, and it was about a little Japanese girl who goes to live in France.
Does anything else happen?
That's basically it. She goes to live in France and work in France, and she's, because everything in France is new to her and everything that she does is new to the French. And it's just
a little anime about Japanese schoolgirls on holiday.
Well, no, she's actually gone there to live, as in she's basically there to live and work. And
Japanese schoolgirl expats.
Yeah, it's basically Japanese expat. And
but they're all schoolgirls.
Yeah. Well, no, there's only one.
Yeah.
There's only one, and this is kind of late 19th, early 20th century. So it's not even modern times. You know, this is basically when somebody from Japan living in France is something that is very, very rare. It's not like she's a tourist with a camera or anything like that. You know, they still have blacksmiths and stuff like that doing the iron work and stuff. And so that's the time period it was set in. And you had a lot of kind of crossover with this sort of format, and you had various things, various influences coming to the fore. It was a weird time, those few years, because that's when you had things like Usagi Drop coming out and Gossick and various things like that.
Could have done a lot more with this.
From what it sounds like, I don't know why I keep getting... I don't know, it just sounds like Lucky Star to me.
It is.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Imagine
if you take away the music.
Imagine if Lucky Star was more slice of life.
And like less referential.
Yeah, and less referential. Humor.
More blonde girl, though.
Well, it doesn't matter that she's blonde. It does to the characters in the series, I know, but...
Yeah. That's very important.
And that's the thing. It's inane, but it's got its charm. And, okay, it's finally getting released 4 years after the fact.
Well, that's cutting edge for us, that.
Yeah, but
2010's just hit here.
The thing is, there are so many others that I would much prefer that I would love to see released. Did Nichijou, My Ordinary Life, ever get a release in the UK?
I don't think so.
See,
the manga's out, but I don't think I've seen the year. I don't think I've seen the anime.
See, where the hell is that?
Yeah,
it's one of
someone's got it because I know I've heard. I know I've heard about it.
Yeah, there's Nichijou, My Ordinary Life, and then there's The Daily Lives of High School Boys, which is hilarious, by the way. If you've never seen it, then you should watch that.
I haven't seen that, but I definitely enjoyed Nichijou a lot.
If you enjoyed Nichijou, then you probably...
Nichijou is very dynamic.
Yeah. If you enjoyed Nichijou, you'll probably like The Daily Lives of High School Boys. It has the word Nichijou in the Japanese title as well.
Mm.
It's slice of life, but the problem I've got with this series with Kirira Mosaic is that it lacks the charm of other slice of life titles like Tamayura and Aria, stuff like that. It doesn't have the same kind of charm as Kwasei and In a Foreign Labyrinth. That had more in the way of characters, actual people, whereas Kirira Mosaic is just kind of bland.
The characters have gimmicks.
Yeah, the gimmicks more than the
characters. I think the gimmicks themselves can be quite funny, but they do get a bit overplayed. But the characters themselves aren't deep. But I don't think a show like that is really needs it. But, you know, it doesn't hurt to have it either.
Yeah. I'll tell you something. Weirdly enough, the closest thing that I can do as a kind of comparison to Kirira Mosaic is the K-On! Movie.
That's the one where they're going to London.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
You see what I mean?
I was thinking why the movie rather than the shows, but yeah, because that has the sort of, you know, oh, it's a different place with different people sort of thing.
Yeah, it's got that Stranger in a Strange Land vibe going to it. There was that one, Gochumon wa Usagi Desuka? Is the Order of Rabbits?
I don't know that one. But the one thing I will say about Kinemura Mosaic is that, again, they could have, like, for me personally, like, my main problem with it is they could have done more with the Stranger in a Strange Land thing. Alice, despite the one who's not being the one who's not half Japanese, she seemed really comfortable in Japan.
Yeah, Alice...
And the other one did to some degree, like, she seemed pretty comfortable in Japan as well, but she kind of had the whole, like, oh, look at me, I'm a boisterous foreigner thing going on.
Yeah,
and that Karen... was kind of like her gimmick.
See, the thing is, I would have thought Karen would
but
be
beyond
more
that, they weren't really out of place, or, like, there wasn't much of like, oh, like, what's this thing? I don't really understand it. There wasn't much of that.
Yeah. I mean, Karen's character, I thought that she would have been much more used to Japan. But you're right. It would have been... Well, with her dad being Japanese, obviously he would have told her stories about Japan. But Alice...
Well, like, I feel like she said that she's lived there before, or at least been there or something.
Yeah. But Alice, on the other hand, I thought that what you said is actually... pretty appropriate. It would have been nice if she was a lot more surprised, if she was a lot more inquisitive about things in Japan, because 5 years is a long time, and a lot can change in 5 years, especially the English.
Like, she has a few moments where she does that, but it tends to be like, oh, here's a joke. Like, basically, if she seems to be interested in something particularly Japanese, you know, it's a setup for a joke. It's not really a part of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the jokes are fine, but I just think they could have used it more often and in a more sort of characters more.
I could only pick out like two funny parts from it. It was the ay 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 one where the whole mix up and they end up going, ay, yeah. That one was funny. And also the casual racism where it's like, have you seen this girl? Looks like this wooden doll.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh, I mean, the ending was canny as well. I like the ending song.
Yeah.
So let's put that as a positive. But for me personally, I'd give it a miss if offered to watch again.
Yeah. I'd say if you have run out of slice of life stuff to watch, then it might be worth a look.
Scrape that barrel.
Yes.
I think you could do far worse than it. I think if you're into that sort of thing, you'll get something out of it. But
yeah, if you're after a cute girl's doing cute things in cute ways, sure, then it's right up there, you know. But if you're after slice of life or anything else aside from that, I mean, if you're after the cute girls doing cute things in cute ways, you've got K-On!, you've got Ichigo Mashimaru, you've got Lucky Star, you've got all sorts of others that you'd probably dive into first before you thought of Kinino Mosaic.
It's a difficult one because, I mean, it's coming out on release. I mean, we got a copy from, where was it we got a copy from?
It's from Manga.
So Manga's bringing it out here. And, I mean, you can watch it on Crunchyroll if you fancy that as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's easily accessible, especially if you've got Crunchyroll and, like, you know, this season's not particularly got any highlights.
Made in Abyss. If you're not watching Made in Abyss, then you're missing out.
That's on Amazon, though.
Oh, that's a shame.
Obviously, the creators has been beyond fantastic this season as well.
Yeah,
like I say, not much on.
Oh, and also Restaurant to Another World. If you're
if you fancy getting really hungry,
yeah. If you're on a diet, do not watch that. Seriously,
as I am on a diet at the moment, and you know, it's
watching that must be torture. Watching that show must be torture for you, Tucky.
My word. It's made us crave tofu. I've had tofu like once in my life. And the way that art styles went, and oh my God. Even natto, the fermented like bean thing, natto spaghetti.
Oh, it always looks gross in anime and stuff.
Yeah, but Tucky
made
wants
it look good.
Yeah, Tucky wants natto spaghetti.
Come on. It is. I mean, you know, I've got compared to a moving train. So you know, the diet's on, and I mean, don't watch it if you're on a diet. Just don't.
Don't do that to yourself. On that note, we are at the end of the show. So we're going to leave you for another week. Keyframe is part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. All of our shows are available on Audioboom, iTunes, or the podcast provider of your choice. If you are listening through any of those, then subscribe to the Geek Show Podcast Network. And you'll stay up to date with all of our latest shows. We have more than just Keyframe. We've got 4Panel, which is about comics and manga and graphic novels and all that good stuff. We've got Literary Loitering, which is supposed to be about books and the arts, but isn't really. But it is, but it isn't, but it is, but it really isn't.
Because it's trying to find itself. It's at that point in life.
No, it's not trying to find itself. Literary Loitering knows exactly what it is. It's the shameful child of the arts world. It's basically the artist who went a little bit mad and is now in the National Gallery dragging his backside across the floor. That is Literary Loitering.
Ew.
Turner winning prizes.
Yes. If Literary Loitering was a work of art, I'm not sure which emotions would be in there. But if you want to find out what mutton shunters mean, then you need to listen to Literary Loitering.
I tried telling Donna what that was and she Googled it. And yeah. There was a bit of a conflict of interest. Because I said, I explained to her what it was, like what the policeman did specifically. And she said, no, it's just a generalization term for all policemen of that time. And I'm like, no, it's policemen that did a specific job in that period.
Yep.
And the argument went on. We dragged that into it. And we're not seeing the kids together. I've got custody this week.
All this over mutton shunters. Anyway, we'll see you all next week when we'll have a lot more anime for us to talk about and other shows as well. I may even do Young Justice. I may even do Justice to Young Justice. I don't know yet. So, until next time, I have been Rob.
I've been Lewis.
I've been Mark.
I've been Tucky.
We'll see you all later.
Bye. Belladonna of Sadness sounds like a perfume.